Mr. Makatini, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I am really excited to have you on the show. I know it's been a long journey for us to get here. It took us about 8 months for us to sit down and have this conversation, but I am really honored that you're here. As I was watching some of your previous interviews, I realized that you are normally on the news or in parliament or behind some major headlines. This must be your first podcast appearance.
Yes, it is.
Thank you so much. I am really honored. But I am excited more about this conversation that we're going to have today. I know that there's a lot that we're going to touch base on. But before we get there, I want to know, how was life for a young Bongo Musa Makatini growing up back in the days?
Growing up in the villages and underdeveloped areas is quite challenging. But interestingly, it ignites enough fire in your bones to want something different, something better. And that, for me, becomes the wind beneath your wings that propels you to something that you can only imagine at the time. Because in the villages, you don't have a lot of role models, a lot of options, a lot of examples. So you have to have something in yourself that drives you internally. And with all of those difficulties, they were good in my view because it shaped the person that you become. It helps you sharpen your senses and focus on the right things, because soldiers and heroes are made from the battlefield. If you are never subjected to a situation that will help you develop the necessary skills, you'll always be lacking.
That's something powerful right there. And you mentioned that you grew up in the village. So I want to know, how did you then access information back then? Entertainment or the news?
In the villages, I mean, at the time when I was growing up in the 80s, right? you don't have a lot of things that today we have. Like, the only source of information was radio. TVs at that time, only few houses had TV. And to go watch something, it's only maybe if there's a soccer game. So it wasn't easily accessible.
Wow.
So this is why I'm saying, those that did well were those that were internally motivated, that they had something that they could only imagine. It's like going doing mathematics, doing physics and science in a school where there's no laboratory.
Wow.
Where you have to imagine things, where you can't really do all of these experiments because there's no facilities. It's the same thing with information when you're growing up in the villages. You have to imagine things. And the greatest thing you will see is when you have when you are ill and you end up in hospital, then you get to see a doctor, see a nurse, you know, because maybe the people you'll be exposed to are teachers, police women, policemen. That's basically all you have.
You mentioned something about what you're exposed to, success in a way. You see teachers, you see policemen. So were there any expectations around education back then, especially where you grew up? Or was it like something straight to say, when I grow up, I just want to be a teacher, or I just want to be a policeman? Was that a form of success back then? Were there any expectations?
Certainly. The only thing that you could dream of was, you normally dream of what you've seen, right? So unless you can imagine things. But you dream of yourself being a teacher. If you do well, you're becoming a principal one day, or being a nurse, being a doctor, being a policeman. That's all you get exposed to. And that's what becomes your map or your guideline in terms of this is what is possible.
Now, you grew up in a politically intense time.
Yes.
In South Africa. How was that like, navigating that as a young man?
It was a very difficult time. I mean, going to school where I grew up was like going to war. When you dress up in the morning and prepare to go to school, you could come back or you could not make it back home. So going to school was a choice between life and death. And a lot of people, my peers that were going to school at that time, had to drop off school because they could not sustain the risk, the pressure that was associated with going to school. to make it practical, I mean, the areas where good schools were dominated by a different political party, and where we were staying was a different political party.
Oh,
so it's like every day you're crossing a war zone to the other side. And if you make it to the other side, the ones where you live we live with don't trust you. Say, how come they allow you to attend school in an area that is dominated by political X, political party X? And then the ones where you're schooling, they don't trust you enough that you are with them. So, and I saw people being killed. I saw people being
injured.
Did
you really see that?
It was like my day-to-day kind of a life when I was growing up and when I was going to school. To a point where after Standard 8, I had to relocate to a different area because it was becoming too risky for me to go to school where I was schooling.
So instead of just dropping out, what made you continue? Was the calling that loud?
My first point, I said, because I grew up hard, I knew that education was the only answer.
Wow.
Was the only way I could turn around my fortunes and help my family to have a better life. So my view was, it's either I die or I go to school.
Wow.
So going to school was like, I might as well die than living under the conditions that I was subjected to. So going to school was like a mission for me, like a soldier taking their guns and going to war to defend their country.
Wow. Now, there's a powerful story about how you got to university. Do you mind taking us back there? What sacrifices had to be made for you to take that first step?
You know, there were days and times where I had to eat my dreams as lunch and as breakfast, where there was nothing else to eat, but where the fire that was triggered by what I saw my family going through kept me going. So decision to go to university was not based on any financial affordability for me to go to school, to university, but I knew to have a better life, I had to go to school. So I finished my trick under difficult circumstances. I'm having a conversation with my parents about what next. Of course, what was obvious was me going, getting a driver's license and becoming a driver of, you know, these cars that used to be called Amafofo, Toyota Stallion. Those were the cars that were mode of transport where I grew up. So aspiring, or what was practical based on my circumstances, was to get a license and be a driver. But of course, I knew I had a bigger dream than that.
Wow.
So ultimately, then what happened is my father sold the two cars that he had, and that was enough for me to pay a registration fee. And that's all I had. What meant then I was not going to get any stipend. I was not going to have any fancy clothes. So I had to forget about all the embarrassment, the humiliation, and pursue my dream.
So here we are looking at the testimony of the two cows that were sold.
Yes.
Wow, that is really powerful. I was inspired by this story when I read it on an article. I was like, what? And looking at the times, like I said, it was politically charged times in South Africa. And I was thinking that, okay, you have something so practical in front of you, which is, I get my license and I can, you know, start feeding my family. But you decided to walk into the unknown. And because it was highly political charged times in South Africa, you couldn't even tell that if I take this route of education, will I succeed or not? But that is a testament. And that's why I wanted you to share this story, because I looked at it and it really inspired me. So when you think about leadership today, has your definition of it changed over the years?
Definition of leadership hasn't changed. Leadership, it's about the movement of people for their own benefit. It's about impact. It's about value creation. It's about really making a difference. However, leaders today need more than just charisma and intent to lead. You need to have real skills and real competency to really drive that change. Because today we're dealing with real problems that tend to be very complex. And we're not living in days of abundance. So you have to work really hard to get the basics. So leaders that, unfortunately, that we have this view that if you have charisma and you can speak good talk and not walk the talk, you are a great leader. And this is why these days we've got leaders that look after themselves than the people that they meant to lead. And I subscribe to a view that says leaders will always give more than they'll ever get back in their lifetime. So as a leader, if you are called to lead and you are passionate about it, you've got to understand that you need to hold yourself in higher standard than the ordinary people.
And what does it mean to lead with purpose? And especially when that pressure is on.
Leading with purpose basically means you need to be transforming lives and transforming the way we live and the way we do things. When you are leading people, you need to help them, elevate them, and help them, propel them to a point where, or a phase where they can achieve things that they wouldn't necessarily achieve if you're not leading them. You need to help ignite something that they didn't even realize they had. So it means then you must have great care, love, and passion for people. You can't lead people you don't care about. And you can't lead people that you don't know.
Wow. I think what stands out for me there is love. Love. I think that's the key word for me. Now, you have led in complex and highly political environments, right? Now, how do you then manage to stay centered when things get chaotic?
You know, I'm a Christian. So the Christianity teaches you some principles like the truth never change. The truth remains the same. So if you're leading under these kind of circumstances, you've got to stick with the truth and value your integrity and understand that we are a brand. Once that brand has lost its brand equity, it's done.
Wow. Now, you can agree with me if I say that I know now you just mentioned that you're a Christian, which that is important. You need to have something that you believe in. But would you agree with me to say behind every leader, there is a team. There is a solid team. And I'm interested in knowing then, how do you then build a high performing team and cultures that thrive under pressure?
High performance is the only way you can survive in this highly competitive environment and landscape. So you've going to have to make sure that your team has the support and the environment within which they operate is conducive for them to excel. You've got to have to make sure that they've got accountability. You know, I say I don't do well with go fetches. You need to give people meaningful roles that they can be excited about because they know they're doing real work that make real difference and that have real impact. And you're going to have to be open to giving feedback and getting feedback. Because remember, as we lead, we are also learning. We need to be getting feedback. So it's not like because you're a leader, now you're a little god, right? That you are the only one who's got access to privilege insights. No. You can get a brilliant idea from a lady that supports you by just making sure that there's warm, the office is clean and there's coffee. She could have an idea that can transform and turn the company around. So you're going to have to be humble enough to learn from your team.
I am sitting here and I am blown. I am actually sharpening my own pencil here. Now, in a few words, what separates a good leader from a great leader? In just a few words.
A great leader is the one that has impact and that put people in the center of what they do. Is a leader that is prepared to give it all for the benefit and the success of their team. Is a leader that does not necessarily fight to be in the photo. You could be behind and you could be not getting the credit, but you're making the impact.
Wow. I'm just going to leave it there. You know, I was not going to have you on the show and not discuss this topic, accountability. You are well known and respected for your strong stance on accountability. I want to know, what does accountability really mean to you personally?
Accountability, it's about holding yourself accountable for everything you say and you do. Accountability is where, when you faltered, you are able, humble enough to accept that it is my mistake, I've made an error here, and learn from it. Accountability, it's about introspecting every day about what you're doing, how you're doing it, how you're impacting on others, and are you making a difference every day? Wow. Accountability, it's about being in charge of what you've been assigned to do and to be in charge of.
Wow.
That, for me, is accountability, where you take both the good and the bad.
And how do you then hold others accountable while still creating a culture of openness and trust without creating any fear?
The magic or the secret is right there, that where there is transparency and accountability, people know what is expected of them and they are supported in achieving that. Once I've mapped out or communicated the vision of the what, the how, and the when and the how, the next thing is for me to hold you accountable. I can't clarify where we're going and not hold you accountable. Because here's a trick. Employees, I say this a lot, will always know which team member is not contributing.
And that's true.
They're looking up to you as a leader to say, what are you going to do about it? If you do nothing about it, then they start saying there's a problem with you. And consistency in leadership is very important. What you do on the left, you must be doing
do
it on the
right. Yes.
And that, for me, is important. That once I've shown you what is expected, I've supported you, I've created an enabling environment and a conducive atmosphere, the next thing, I must hold you accountable.
From what you just said now, as a leader, we all know that sometimes you will have to make necessary but unpopular decisions. Do you recall any moments where you had to make those decisions? And how do you then deal with the pushback after that unpopular decision?
I make these decisions, such decisions, almost every day.
Yeah.
The problem is, if the worst thing is not to make a decision, because it paralyzes the entire system. So as a leader, you will have to make decisions. And not every time when a decision is made will make sense to those that are impacted. It's like growing up. What your parents taught you, there were things you fought. Only at a later stage in your life, you learn to appreciate. So as a leader, you have that vision that you can see a little bit far from where others could see. And it is your responsibility to lead them to that destiny. So in those instances, you, as long as you follow the process, I say leaders can make any decision. As long as there is a process and you can explain that decision that you've made. And you can also explain it in a manner that people get, they may not agree with you, but they must come to appreciate why a decision has to be made. Wow. That decision is like to cut jobs, decision to change the structure of a company, decision to focus on other things that were not necessarily the priority in the beginning or when people were employed. You know, your job as a leader is to read the trends, read the market dynamics, and understand what your clients or customers want, and make sure that you are able to deliver on those expectations.
Yeah. You have to make decisions, and we all know that it's unpopular decisions. But now, I want to talk about this, even when you have to cut jobs. Now, we understand how there are families that are getting impacted here. And when politics is involved, doesn't that get messy now when you're touching people's job? Doesn't that get messy, though?
Of course, where politicians are involved, there's a lot of posturing, a lot of talk, and very less legally doing. Because the caliber of politicians that we have think life is about just saying things and uttering statements. Now, business teaches you that it's more about what you can deliver, what you can do. It's not necessarily the PR exercise only. So yes, maybe there's PR there, but you're PRing something that is created, that is there, that is present.
Mm.
So you don't spin things. So of course, when you're operating in an environment that has got political party or political players, you'll always spend a lot of time navigating politics. And unfortunately, as a business person, you must never compromise yourself and try to please politicians, because politicians are not people that you can really rely on, because they get promoted when they do bad.
Mm.
Because abnormality to most of them has become the normality. Mm. And this is why our country is where it is. We were led by people that don't believe in the very same thing that they're advocating. I mean, they'll say we must send our kids to public school, but their kids don't go to public school.
Exactly.
They don't go to public hospitals.
Exactly.
Okay? Of course, when they're driving in our roads that are full of potholes, they drive in government-sponsored cars. So they actually don't feel the pain that we feel.
And probably they don't even get to see that pothole, because before they get to that pothole, there's 5, 6, 7 cars that drove past there. Sure, Mr. Makatini said it. He said it. What's the biggest mind shift that you had to make from leading in the public sector to now a private sector?
Luckily for me, I started my career in the private sector.
Mm.
Then I went to a public sector as a non-executive chairman. What I immediately learned is that the speed at which we do things in the private sector does not always work in the public sector, because you spend a lot of time there consulting. You spend a lot of time managing politics and egos than doing the actual work. And this is why things take long. And there's a long, like they're called red tape. And as a result, the level of productivity and efficiency in the public sector is compromised.
That's true.
I'm not saying there's no politics in private sector. There is. But there's also a decent amount of time and energy being directed at doing the real stuff that needs to be produced or delivered.
Mm. Well, now, do they... the expectations and the pressure differ in running a public institution compared to now being at a private group like Prime Media? Do the expectation and the pressures differ?
For me, the expectation is we should all be creating value and sustaining value and making sure that these companies are financially viable and people are involved, engaged in real work. That should be the same. This mentality that there's a bottomless funding or resources that are available in the public sector is actually wrong, because someone needs to generate real money that can go to do real stuff.
True.
So for me, I go with the same mentality that if I'm in charge of this entity, it must be delivering on its mandate. It must be creating the value it's expected. So it should apply consistently across.
Mm. Wow. Now, are there any lessons from your days in the public service time that are helping you thrive in your role today?
A lot. One thing that I learned is patience. I'm from a school of thought where I used to work for companies like Accenture, where everything is project managed. You need to be able to put a timesheet at the end of the week, allocate each and every hour of your time to a project in terms of where you're going to allocate your time from a chargeability point of view. So working in the public sector taught me to be patient, but also it taught me the value of consulting.
Mm-hmm.
Because in consulting, of course, you get exposed to a diversity of views, which in one way could enhance and enrich your discussion and produce better quality product, because you've engaged a lot of people that can influence and share with you other perspective that may be your blind spot. But of course, the caliber of some of these leaders in politics, for me, they've never run anything.
Mm-hmm.
They've never worked anywhere. All they do, they went up through the political ranks and they've got really nothing much to offer other than empty promises.
Yeah. I think I fully agree with you when it comes to that point. You said something about in the private sectors, things move fast. And in the political side of things, there's a lot of consulting. And I think that's the issue that we have in our country today. Instead of us dealing with issues, there's a lot of consulting. There are court cases that are even going on for over a decade. And I appreciate the fact that, I mean, you said it boldly here. There's a topic that I want us to touch on now. We often admire leaders, right, for their roles and positions. But we rarely talk about the personal cost that comes with being a leader. What has leadership demanded from you mentally and emotionally?
It demands a lot. Firstly, on a at a practical level, your family goes through a lot. And they have to sacrifice a lot in supporting you in pursuing that leadership journey. Meaning, I spend less time with my kids. I spend less time with my wife. I'm hardly home. At times, even when I'm home, my mind is thinking about work issues. It also forces you, it puts a lot of burden because you're leading a company. There's hundreds of people who are employed there who are supporting families. If something goes wrong, it will have a negative impact on you first as a leader. Mm-hmm. And because you're a leader, of course, you're expected to see a little bit far than where the people that you're leading can see. Mm. People are expecting to be paid end of the month. As a leader, you have to worry about, is there enough money to pay salaries at the end of the month? Mm. All employees are expecting at the end of the month is money in their bank account. You have to make sure that that money is available. So that challenges you both emotionally and physically. And there are times where you have to make tough decisions, where you know it's not personal, but the person is impacted. If I say to you, your job has gone redundant, yes, it's a business thing, but there is a real person involved here. Mm-hmm. And as a leader, you have to deliver this message and manage the situation. That is a lot. And sometimes people will say, you know, CEOs, leaders get paid a lot of money as if they don't deserve it. The truth of the matter is you are creating something for everyone to have a role in. Surely you have to be investing a lot of time learning, reading, researching so that you can have that impact.
And this is why I want us to have this conversation, because there's a lot that happens behind the curtains. And that's why I honestly wanted to have this conversation. Is there something that you wish people understood about leadership that no one really talks about?
Leadership is a calling. And once you've availed yourself to lead, be prepared to lead. And as I said, that leaders will always give more than they'll ever get back. It's not a fancy thing. It's not a title thing. It's about real people, real life. And if people were to be honest with themselves, if they've got it in themselves to lead, because sometimes we end up with leaders that are there for themselves, and it suffocates the entire system because you've got someone there who's only concerned about themselves, not about the people that they are leading. It's the same with the politicians we have. You know, they drive around with blue lights, bodyguards. Like, we voted them. We don't have bodyguards. Now they need to be guarded against the very same people who voted them. What is so special about them? Because leadership is about serving. Now, how are you serving if you're flying around, driving around with blue lights with 20 bodyguards?
With no experience of what people are experiencing out there.
And what shocks me is that they get shocked every day when these things happen, when actually they know the state of our road, the state of our lives, the economy, where the economy is. You know, for me, it's about them. It's not about us. Because very little gets done that really make a difference in our lives.
I can tell that you have a passion about for leadership, and I wish we had more leaders like yourself. Maybe this country could be steered to the right direction. Now, I've had to battle with myself with this question that I want to ask you now, because like as you mentioned, we look at leaders and we're like, you make it seem easy. You make things possible. So I want to ask you that, have you ever reached a point where you felt like, this is too much, I can't take it, the pressure is too heavy for me? Have you ever gotten to that point?
Oh, yes. I get to that stage a lot of times because I'm human. And there are times where there's contradicting priorities. Mm. For an example, I have to be present to be a father and a husband to my wife, mm-hmm. and a father to my kids. And there are instances where work pressure contradict or work against what I need to be doing for my family. At times then you ask yourself, is it worth it? It becomes more problematic when you meet leaders that do things that when you look at it, you're like, is it worth it? Mm-hmm. When you look at how other people are getting away with murder. So it is a lonely journey being a leader, because everybody looks up to you for answers.
Mm.
And they come with their problems. You know, in my office, I have an open door policy. I have a queue, a line of people wanting to talk to me who most of the time they've got problems.
Wow. And for me, what you just said now is that you have an open door to listen to other people's problems. And this is where I was like, but where do the leaders go? Who's going to hear the leaders cry? You know, so once you feel that state of emotion, do you have any practices that you do just to keep yourself centered when things get chaotic or when there's pressure?
Yes, you have to find ways to manage pressure and stress. Mm. Like I haven't done it lately because it's quite cold in the mornings, but I do 8 kilometers in the morning before
you
preparing
run.
For work. I run. But I think the support system, it's very funny that the family, like your partner, is the one that is sacrificing the most, but is the one that has to support you and maybe be there for you when the work problems and pressures are overwhelming you.
Wow.
So this is where sometimes I think we give less credit to our partners for the success that we achieve, not realizing that they are the core and the pillar of that success. Because when you're down and you are frustrated, they are the ones that are there to give you that cup of coffee, that warm meal. And, you know, so at the end of the day, it's about the support system you have back home.
Mm. And that's why they say behind every successful man, there's a strong woman. I appreciate you sharing that part with us. So when you think about legacy, what comes to your mind?
Legacy for me, you know, in the Bible, they say a wise man is the one who leaves the inheritance for his children. And the legacy and the inheritance is not really the money that you leave, but is the name and the brand that you leave behind. That when you meet my daughter or my son, when they tell you they're my kid, you'll say, oh, I know your father. He was a great man. I know your father. This is the contribution he had or he made. It's about that.
That is powerful when you say it is not about money, because I can tell you right now, the Gen Zs that we have today, they all about why did my dad leave me behind? And we miss these powerful teachings and impact that we make in people's lives. And for me, I think that's what legacy is. So we have a special segment here on the show where we call it a masterclass. This is where you as our guest get to speak about anything. It can be a teaching, or it can be an idea that you feel like people need to hear. So, Mr. Makatsini, the floor is yours.
I think for me, the burning thing these days, it's about citizens getting involved, getting engaged, and taking in keen interest in our country. Because where citizens are less engaged and involved, leaders, mainly political leaders, become less and less accountable. I think we've given too much credit and overly reliance on the political system that is actually non-existent without us playing a part. It's the same question about liberation, that there are people who think they can take credit and forget about the role that was played by the communities, by people, ordinary people. So my wish is for every South African to take keen interest in what is happening in their country and to participate in their local community structures and in holding those that are in leadership position accountable. That's the only way we can get our country back on track. And we can have a country that we can talk about. If we continue where we're so disengaged, we're so fragmented, where we've become so focused on ourselves when everything around us is collapsing, what's the point of having these high walls, gated estates, when everything else around you is collapsing?
We need to get everyone, every citizen involved, and we need to know what's happening in our country. We need to care about what's happening. How do we get everyone off their seat and start caring about what's happening in their country? What can we do?
The simple analogy for me is like we're in this boat. And of course, you're sitting on the other side where the water that is leaking has not reached where you're sitting. Mm. But the truth of the matter is that the boat is leaking and water is coming in. And ultimately, we're all going to drown. That should be enough reasons for people to say, I care. The other important thing is we're like on autopilot as a country. Nobody really cares. And the truth of the matter is, we need to care. If you talk about legacy and inheritance, what country are our children going to inherit? So all these things that we're building, if the foundation is shaky, there will be nothing left. And even those that think they've got enough money, ultimately when the entire ecosystem is broken, talk infrastructure. The infrastructure is compromised in most areas. The roads are getting worse. Nothing really works. So my view is we have nowhere else to go. Because even if you run elsewhere, South Africa will always be your home. And it will be impossible for you to uproot everybody that is linked to you. I mean, we have extended families, uncles, cousins, you name it. Now you say you're going to leave the country. You're just going to live with your nuclear small family? What happens to your relatives? We can't be that selfish. Wow. So the truth of the matter is we have to roll up our sleeves, get involved, participate, and shape this country and have a government that we think we deserve.
And what's your take on this so-called genocide that's happening in our country?
It's heartbreaking. And this is why I'm saying we can talk about the problems, we can talk about what's happening, but until we talk about what are we going to do about it, for me, we're just raising alarm but doing nothing about it. And this is why my approach is South Africans, let's get up and do something. Participate. Be involved. Care about what's happening in your surrounding. Contribute. We can't focus on a blame game. Part of the reason why I did go and be in a board of a government entity was because I was also tired of us professionals always pointing at things that are not working. but never there to offer solutions. Because ultimately, if you believe you've got experience, you've got ideas, let's hear it. Contribute. That's what we need.
Wow. I think the key takeaway from me in today's masterclass with you is do something.
Do something.
We are all in the same boat and it's sinking.
Yes.
And eventually we all gonna drown. So we need to do something. Thank you so much for that powerful, powerful analogy. Outside of all the titles and the boardrooms, what really brings joy to you and peace in your everyday life, outside of the suits now?
I have a rural home from the village where I come from.
Wow.
My wife and I built a rural home, which we call Gwazi Thulele. When I'm done and I have a weekend off, I go there. I enjoy the peace, the tranquility that is there. And it's an environment where I grew up. I'm not excited about going overseas, but being among the people that raised me in the environment where I grew up and be there and offer solutions and ideas in how we can make a difference beyond our boardroom lives and what we do in Johannesburg.
Well, you know, I did some digging, right? And there's something that I really liked because it kind of showed me another side that we don't get to see. And I actually find out that you have a nickname.
Which one?
Oh, there's more. I found out that there's a nickname, Ailali Konjo.
Ailali Konjiwe.
Ay.
Yes.
Ongaichaza.
Yeah. This, interestingly, my uncle gave me this nickname, Ailali Konjiwe. It talks about my decisiveness. Once I've decided on something, I do it. No matter what. So when they say Ailali Konjiwe, it's like, if you've pointed that that bull must be slaughtered tonight, it must be slaughtered. Ailali Konjiwe. Because you've pointed at it and said, that one must die, must be slaughtered, it must be slaughtered. So my uncle gave me that because of the events and the things that I had gone through in my life where it came to a realize and appreciate that I'm a decisive person.
He really saw the vision. If I know you just gave us an extensive masterclass right now, but if you were to give one piece of advice to our future leaders, something hard end, what would it be?
Work hard to have real skills so that you can have real contribution that you can hang your hat on.
Now, before I let you go, we have something special that we do on the show. It's a tradition. Every guest that comes in leaves behind a legacy note, something that you'd want to pass to the next generation. It can be a teaching. It can be an advice that you want to pass to the future leaders. And what we will do with these notes is that we will compile them into a book. It will be a collection of wisdom from leaders like yourself to the next generation. So Bongo Musa, whenever you're ready, you can put it in the box. This is a special moment right here. Your words, your legacy will live beyond this conversation. So thank you so much. And to you, our audience, thank you so much for tuning in. If there's anything that resonated with you in this powerful conversation, please do like, share, comment, and don't forget to subscribe. This is Success Unscripted with Peter Manjad. Until next time. Stemakatin.
Thank you.
Bonge kakhulu.